Australian rules football is a pretty action-packed, fascinating game to watch. And part of it is 22 people on one side versus 22 people on the other side, and you have to bounce the ball and kick it between some goalposts. And if you kick it between some goalposts and special conditions apply, you can get a full 6 points. So it's a bit like Quidditch, Australian style. And now, we're going to look at the instance. If someone touches, if you kick the ball and someone gets a little finger to the ball and touches it before it goes to the goal posts, that's not 6 points, it's just 1 point. In fact, if they so much as get just the tip of a fingernail to that ball, which often can happen, they're leaping up and they just touch it, it's either 6 points or 1 point, and that can determine whether a team wins or loses, goes to the grand final, a whole heap of things. And over the time, people have demanded more and more, and they've got these beautiful high-speed cameras, and it produces frame by frame, second by second, these pictures, and you can actually see the ball traveling just 10 centimeters at a time, and the hands moving up, and you can judge whether the person has touched, or you can't necessarily judge. There's often discussions where there's some really close things, and when they see it, they can push two frames back and forth and go over and try and get an impression of what's going on. That's what we have in the internet called a GIF. A GIF is just a short section of motion back and forward, but we're going back into this football analogy. The cameras they have are pretty fantastic. These are taking shots incredible fractions of a second, so within over 100 frames a second, and each exposure is a thousandth of a second, because if it took 100 frames a second, each frame would be a long, the ball would be blurred. There's no blurriness at all. This is an ultra-fast shot. And in this time, I'm going to talk about how we do this for atoms, and we've got the same questions. Do the atoms touch? Does this actually occur? At what point does the electron jump from one atom to another? And we have actually developed these fantastic cameras, and I'm going to discuss this in this episode podcast of Peter Hill Explains, where I attempt to discuss things some scientific. I'm attempting it, part of my cardiac rehab and part of my skills, all these different strategies. I'm sort of selecting different things to discuss, different levels of preparation times, a different thought process. I'm actually honing myself as an elite athlete of explanation to try and get these things down. And one of the things is that as I explain things, I realize as I go right through, I don't quite understand that aspect of it. And often I don't get a chance to check it. But I want to be very honest with you if there's a point that I don't quite understand. So we're trying to do a game score review for an atom, a atomic reaction. This is atoms, and it sounds insane how we can do it. Now, though we can't see individual atoms, we can actually pulse light into an atom, and when the atom emits light out again, we can do calculations and work out that orientation of what the atom was, the shape of the atom, and all that that type of stuff. So although we can't photograph an atom, we can actually put light in it and see the light emitted, and then analyze the light emitted, and then reconstruct the actual configuration of the atom. That can be done with supercomputers, quantum mechanics. That is, basically, the atom is an antenna of a particular shape, and we pulse it, and we can see the light coming out at a particular distribution, frequencies, and reconstruct it, you know, sort of do it. So although the photograph is complex to understand, and we don't see an individual atom, a way that we can actually reconstruct on a computer, reconstruct the actual image. I know that doesn't sound that very interesting, but the ideal thing is to actually have two shots, one shot to set it up and the second shot to measure it, and have those very finely spaced. And of course, as with the wall review, you've got to have a very, very fast camera indeed, much faster than frames per second. It's the number of frames per second, but within that frame, a tiny fraction. Now, bear in mind, atoms are moving very, very quick. So in the AFL, we're talking milliseconds and microseconds. So milliseconds between frames and microseconds for the actual shot. And this is incredible electronics that we don't argue with. We're everyone's focused on, did he get the score? Did he win the grand final? Did he get through? The science of it is pretty fascinating. And obviously, with atoms, when we're trying to actually snake our atoms through an incredible range of reactions and try and work out what's right, and indeed we have a scenario which is pretty vanilla, but it allows us to make conclusions about more complex, more critical, life-threatening or life-saving scenarios where these molecules go together. There's possibility of making fantastic new drugs or molecules which we thought were impossible. We can set the conditions up straight. So there's the prize. Our grand final prize is not winning a grand final, but being able to make new molecules or understand how engines work or how sparks go by getting these little jigsaw puzzle pieces out. So we have to get a very fast camera indeed, and it has to actually go in not the billionth of a second, nanoseconds, not the picosecond, which is a trillionth of a second, but femtoseconds, all the way down to incredibly fast light pulses. And of course, we live in a world where things millisecond or microsecond at the best. How do you get right down to that spacing? How could you possibly get down to that spacing? And the answer is that people do it, and this is the part of the explanation of the actual mechanics of how it's done. You start off with your laser pulse, and your laser pulse can typically be a few microseconds long, so a millionth of a second long. So you get a very powerful laser pulse from an excimer laser pulse. So it's basically a diffuse spark in these gas produces a laser pulse, and by actually pushing this laser pulse into a material, you can convert the color of that laser pulse to another color, depending if that's a non-linear material. And when I say non-linear, it means that 1 + 1 isn't 2, 1 + 1 is 2.2. There's a multiplication effect in it. I can't quite describe it. A linear equation is just using plus, and this is using a multiplier or power term. Now, the effect of this is that you can produce one piece of light if you treat something gently. But if you really have something, you can produce something called a super continuum. That is, rather, you have a prism and you see your original laser light and new laser light formed at a different wavelength. Instead of that, if you really use these materials very hard, the crystals in the right way, gases in the right way, there's many ways of describing this, you can actually get a pulse which goes into your crystal and comes out not as one color, but as a whole rainbow of colors from the infrared to the ultraviolet. This material is so shook up and so many things are happening that it comes out, but it's not thermal radiation, it's coherent laser radiation. The actual pulses are in synchrony. So a laser radiation, if you can imagine it, is I'm trying to describe it. Everything's in line. So it's like a military parade. Everything's marching together. You can imagine those arrays of North Koreans all marching in time compared to mad shoppers at Christmas running backwards and forwards in all directions. Laser radiation's like that, except in this case, you bring in marching at a certain rate, you can compress it, it comes out, and it's all marching in time, but marching in time but with different step lengths. That's going to be a bit hard to explain, but it is a podcast, so you've got to accept the fact that you can produce a rainbow laser pulse, a short rainbow laser pulse. And it's 3 milliseconds in, and the laws of physics don't change. It's three microseconds in, three microseconds out. You can't change that. But then you can do something rather tricky. You can actually send it through a prism or a diffraction grating and organize the red pulses which travel more slowly through your diffraction, through the diffraction gratings, to catch up with your blue pulses. You can actually get that millisecond, so that microsecond pulse, and actually collect the red end of that pulse, spectrally red end of the pulse, and actually put it on top of your blue end of the pulse. Reconstruct it, man. Again, there's a bit of maths to understand the Fourier reconstruction. But you can synthesize by the use of diffraction gratings and prisms. You can turn your microsecond pulse into a femtosecond pulse. So this is some of the things that you'll see. You'll see a laser, a supercontinuum producer, a rainbow producer, laser rainbow producer. You'll see mirrors, and you'll see a diffraction grating which grabs spectrally one end of the pulse and puts it and times it to put in on the front end of the pulse. And then at the end of it, this pulse will come out as a femtosecond array. And then you can beam split it, if you've got everything correct, and create a bang-bang effect. So you can actually get these femtosecond things, and with a little screw and a little dial on the side, you can actually dial up a picosecond delay between these femtosecond pulses and actually capture your molecule at critical stages and unlock the secrets of it. So I wish I could explain it a little better. This is dispersion overcompensation. So you've created a pulse, you've created from one frequency and you've dispersed it into many, and then you've reassembled it into a very fast pulse. And that's as best as I can explain it. There's probably things I don't understand, and I've convinced myself that I've understood it, so there may be sections I don't understand. I do understand that for many years, people around the world couldn't reproduce the leading lab until someone worked out that having very pure mirrors are necessary. This is a single coating mirrors which actually didn't add phase noise or phase complications into the light produced. So it's not only that the color has to be conserved, the color has to be looked after, or the frequency of the light has to be looked after. It's also the phase, the tiny little phase delays as it goes through 3 minutes has to be delayed. But then indeed you get these femtosecond pulses, and indeed you can actually do grand final photographic reconstruction of molecules. Now, this is, I suppose, for me, interesting, because it's one aspect of science which is held back from the general public because there's several steps of understanding to go, and the importance is not there. But the femtosecond lasers can really unpick motion, similar to a high-speed camera looking at the shot. Your golfing shot or your tennis shot can unpick and allow us to coach us the way through. I don't know where this is going improving, but I suppose the general development that I've heard of is it's getting easier and more reliable to actually just put one of these things together. The black art aspects of it are beginning to disappear, and it's a fantastic tool. And the objective of this one is this podcast is two levels. One is to check the improvement of my podcasting explanation ability, and also to start to see if I can, through explanation, paint pictures of things, and try and strike a balance between the rate of explanation and the degree of the rate I can explain equipment and then explain how it's connected together. Now, there's always a risk that people who've never seen lasers or diffraction gratings or mirrors and stuff like that can't imagine it, and those people who do probably know the answer already. So it's trying to pick your way forward between making something which is detailed, good, but unwieldy, or too short and people can't follow it. But I've attempted to explain it. In the meantime, keep on teaching and thinking science.